Hello and welcome to a special two-part episode of Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah. Today in the studio with me, I have Fred Destan. Fred, for those that need an introduction, is the founder of Stride VC, a seed fund operating out of London and currently investing out of its second fund. Their tagline is Dissenters Welcome. Prior to Stride, Fred was a general partner at Accel and Accomplice. He was a lead investor on seven companies that have exited for over $1 billion in value, including Deliveroo, Zoopla, PillPack, now Amazon Health, and many others. In these episodes, we talk about how founders have a level of discontent with VCs and how surprising that has been. Is operator as a VC a magic label? How many VCs have empathy for the founder journey? And why minimalist boards and how VCs can move the needle for the founders they work with is so important. Navigating the need to be seen as a VC, venture as an artisanal occupation, the fact that venture is not complicated, but that you do need to be adaptable, and how you make decisions in a state of uncertainty. We talked about, as a VC, you are living in a world of both skill and luck, how returns come from the pick and the entry price. We talk about the Cambrian explosion in venture and where we are now, and how you can be a generalist, but you can't be generic. We end up in the second episode talking about VCs as human beings, how you can embrace the beginner's mindset, and how you should look beyond the information that's being presented to you, and how to avoid the trap of lazy thinking. Let's get into it. This is Nothing Ventured with me, Arish Shah, the podcast where I talk to the people behind the stories that make the venture capital ecosystem go round. I've been working with startups from pre-seed to Series C for the last decade, and companies that I've worked with have gone on to realize value and exit or raise funds in excess of $500 million. I really hope you enjoy the episode, and if you have a guest that you'd love to see me have on, or you have a comment on any of the episodes that I've recorded so far, do reach out to me on LinkedIn or Twitter. I'd love to hear from you. Let's get straight into it. Fred, great to have you back in the studio. We covered like a lot of stuff about the craft of venture, how VCs can show up at board, how can they show up for founders in the first episode. And in this episode, I think we want to get a little bit sort of into maybe the more philosophical side of venture and where you've gotten to in your journey. So I wanted to kick this off around thinking about the topic of VCs as human beings, right? Because I think a lot of us in the ecosystem, certainly on the founder side, over the last number of years have often put, you know, we've tended to either put founders on pedestals or we put investors on pedestals. But in both situations, right, these are human beings. They're people. They are, you know, they have their own internal struggles. So how do you think about that? Like what are, and you yourself, of course, have, you know, come through a journey where you've decided to pause and reflect on things. So how have those reflections gone, I guess, maybe?
Well, who knew VCs were human beings?
Struggle with that one, yeah.
So avoiding generalizations too much, I think it's interesting to step into the shoes of a venture investor and think about the arc of their work. So on the one hand, one of the things that's difficult with venture is you don't get feedback loops. Mm. So the results feedback loops tend to be, of course, very long. In my case, I think after 7 years, I started to realize that my portfolio was good. After 9 or 10, it sort of started kicking in on returns. And after 12 years, the returns really took off. It's a long freaking time, right? And in the middle, it's really quite messy as to whether you get signal. I mean, you can get lucky and have things that fly early, but you don't even know if that's skill or luck anyway.
Yeah.
So you're in these very long feedback loops. And then internally within most partnerships are not very good at giving feedback. They're not in a habit of 360s in companies or regular sit downs with your manager or something. And so you don't get that much feedback from there either. you kind of have to feel how well you're doing, or somebody might kindly take you aside, but certainly in bigger firms, it's not very systematic. Then when you're on a board or you're working with founders, everybody tells you you're great because you hold the key to the next check. You're unlikely to get called out. And yeah, nobody wants to piss you off. And then to make it worse, you're on LinkedIn and you're posting advice and all the founders go, that's great. You know, here's five things you should never do when you fundraise. And you drop the worst fucking advice on the planet. You're still going to get 250 likes because people are going to go like, well, that's amazing because they may want to raise for you.
Yeah.
So you get flattered by the ecosystem in a way, and it's sort of endemic because people are going to come and pitch you, and then you're in a position of power of saying yay or nay. So, you know, there's a lot in there that doesn't provide you with honest feedback, but worse than that, kind of tends to reinforce certain traits, which may or may not be helpful, right? So the first thing is like, well, if you wanna think about personal work and Jung, for example, the whole idea of the shadow is aspects of your personality you do not see. Mm. It's the whole concept of the shadow. The only way you're going to see your shadow is if benevolent friends and coworkers and other people are able to show it to you. And again, if you think about, if I take us back to the context of the board for a second, self-awareness in a board is golden. So people come into the boardroom with things like they're anxious because their portfolio is under stress. They might be under stress themselves in their position at the partnership. Your company might be not doing great and that feeds more anxiety. They have the perception that everybody else's company is doing great except yours. And so there's a bit of, but why the fuck aren't we performing better? So they might arrive at the board with a whole set of things like fear, anxiety, pressure from the partnership, etc., that you don't see.
And blame, I guess, would be a part of it, right?
And possibly blame, yeah. Sure, why not? So they may come with that. They may have had discussions with other people's portfolios are doing great, and they come with inflated expectations about where you should be. And then more importantly, they come with their own emotional needs. What are core emotional needs of every human being? I want to be seen. I want to be heard. I want to be loved. I want to be respected. You know, so they're kind of come with that whole thing to the board. And I've sat with people, board members, who say, I know my contribution is great. So, for example, case of this lady, she will hold back because the men speak too much. This is a bit gendered, but it was the scenario. And so she finds that everybody's talking out of their ass, which, you know, with a group of men would not be uncommon. And then she'll come out with the advice, but when she does, it's too strong. And so there's that thing of like suppressing your own voice, but then coming out too strongly. And then when we dug into it, it was like, well, what is it about that? What's the trigger inside of you, right? And the answer was, I really want to be seen to be helpful by my founders. That's it. It was like, well, okay, you know, that's your need. That's actually not the founder's need, which is interesting. So the first thing is to recognize what's inside of me versus what's of service to the situation I'm in. So if you think about that and you go to boards all the time, you're a professional board member. You might sit on 8 to 10 boards. You do a lot of fucking boards. This is not some theoretical use case that you encounter from time to time. You know, it's part of your job. And so your capacity to bring self-awareness and to realize what's your own set of emotions versus what's required in the moment is very important. So for that, you need, in meditation terms, you'd say subject-object relationship. Like, I'm able to observe my own emotions as an object and then park them to the side if they're not helpful to the situation at hand, right? So you can see that it requires a fair amount of personal development work to be able to really show up, especially in difficult boards, to show up in the right way. Mm. So, and people, you will see people go into anger, go into fear, generally stop listening. Whenever you're anxious, it's like your view of the world diminishes and you can only see the thing you're anxious about. So you lose all your peripheral vision. And building companies, being on board, is all about peripheral vision. What's going on in the room? Why did the co-founder just lean back and cross his arm when the CEO said that?
Mm.
You know, okay, so that's an important cue. So what just happened? Can we bring that back in? So it's like stuff like that. It's not just what's the discussion that's in front of you. So if you go back to the VC makeup, you know, the difficulty in a way is there is a lot in this work that will reinforce your ego. You know, people will tell you you're great. You will stand on stage at Web Summit. You will be showered in praise by people with your money. And so the sort of staying grounded through all of that, especially if you become successful, because, you know, I'm on the first three European Midas list. I mean, so fucking what? But, you know, you can get to a place where other people put you on a pedestal. So now people say, Fred's a legend. I'm like, I have a VC who runs small-sized funds and backs people. Like, I do not want to be your legend. You know, I'm very happy if you appreciate the work I do. Like, it reminds me of a quote by Ram Dass. So one of his followers came to him and said, Ram Dass, will you be my guru? And Ram Dass said, yes, now what? You know, and this is a good question. So back to your point about heroes. Like, there is no need to put people on a pedestal. It's like, you know, what is there to learn from the way that person does their job? And guess what? You don't become Steve Jobs by aping Steve Jobs' biography. You know, you don't see all the mess he went through. You don't see all the shit he went through, all the uncertainties and all the crap.
It's like the Theranos, like the famous photo of her in the polo neck, right? Like, emulation is not the same as being, right?
Right. So, you know, guess what? You only have your own journey to follow, and then can you be grounded in truth and humility and learning? So VCs will drift that way. And this is why I go back to the craft, because the craft makes you humble. You know, when you're a craftsman, you're never done, right? Whether you're making swords in Japan or turning wood or something. You know, George Nakashima probably felt at some point like a master, but then he's like, oh shit, this next piece of wood looks really
good. But you're always chasing perfection, right?
Yeah, and you also respect the time it takes to do things right. You know, the attention to detail, you know, you don't make grand gestures of venture-like behavior as if that was going to be the thing.
Yeah.
You know, you go back to, am I asking the right questions? Yeah. Do I understand the problem correctly? You know, what are the distinctions that I need to make here to help the founder think about this better? You don't go, well, I got this venture shit figured out, and drop the wording that you read in someone else's blog.
Yeah, it's like the outcome is the outcome is an output of the process, and it's the process that is the thing, right? It is the thing that actually adds value, whether you are an artisan, whether you're a VC, whether you're anything else. It is the love of the craft that drives you rather than necessarily just the outcome.
I was sitting on a board once where the company is looking like it was going to be a breakout, and we were trying to assess sort of what a reasonable to ambitious kind of valuation range was, sort of medium term, because we're also thinking about how much capital to raise, et cetera. So it wasn't some kind of abstract exercise. And then one guy, he was in his early 30s, late 20s or something, from one of the growth funds in the US, just sits there and goes, and how do we make this a $25 billion company? And we all looked at him going, dude, if you build a $1 billion company, if you've been involved even remotely in building a $1 billion company, we're talking about like sort of a 1 to 5 range. And then, you know, he thought he was sort of asking a profound question. And I get the intent of it. Like, I've read The Power Law. But, you know, it's these moments when you're like, if we can, we will, we promise. But, you know, are you in the room? Or are you? It's a statement of grandeur.
Yeah.
You know, it's a narcissistic statement, right? And so stuff like that, it will come easily because you get fed what you perceive to be wisdom out in the market, in the tropes and the memes and the, you know, the one-liners from Elon or whoever it may be, or Peter Thiel, and you think that's wisdom, right? It's not. It's the crystallized wisdom of someone else.
Mm. From their journey, from their experience.
Which they've earned,
yeah,
you know?
Sure.
So it's like, just go back to say things that you own, right? Like, say things, do things that you own, because you know they come from a position of they're correct, you know, they're correct because your expertise is correct, because your intuition is correct, because it's what's required in the moment, instead of blah, you know, like it's fucking, we live in a world where everybody.
And there is a lot of blah, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean, because the way I think about it, and you're right, I mean, look, part of the problem is, look, and this podcast in and of itself is part of that, right? You know, everyone is trying to make their mark. Everyone is trying to stand out as an expert, as a talking head. Everyone is trying to stand out in a really saturated market of people that seem to be, you know, standing out left, right, and center, right? I get quite amused at seeing, certainly on LinkedIn, whether it's, you know, around venture or other topics, when you look behind the post, when you look at the, like, you know, does the post suggest that that person is successful? Has the post been successful, right? And, you know, I have 18,000 followers on LinkedIn. Does that mean I'm successful? No, it means I have 18,000 followers on LinkedIn, right? Does that translate to something? Not necessarily. Maybe I've had something interesting to say at some point and those people have come along and said, okay, yeah, click a button. But that's what it is. It's clicking a button. And I think, actually, for me, as an example, over the last, you know, 6 months, my realization has been, oh, actually, maybe I just need to stop just writing stuff unless I really, and I've always tried only to write stuff that I mean and that is authentic. But there comes a point where equally you can get caught in the trap and the cycle of posting for the sake of posting or saying for the sake of saying, right? Which is, I think, what you're saying. And actually, how do you step back from that and start thinking about, okay, when I say something, if I want people to pay attention, then what I am going to say is only what at my core is what I feel, what I really feel needs to be said, rather than just for the sake of saying it.
Totally. So if we take one extreme, people are automating comments using AI on LinkedIn, right?
Yeah.
So I understand that's part of a technology-enabled strategy to try and build your follower count, etc., or improve your position in the algo, or whatever it may be. But you are, at that point, you're contributing to the biggest problem we have as a society, which is, you know, overabundance of digital that's consuming all of our fucking time.
And noise, yeah.
Right? So you're contributing to that, period. And the next question I would ask is, when you're writing things that are derivative or writing things that you don't own or writing things that are a bit fake, or how do you feel? Because you can always direct your attention outside and say, well, that post worked really well. Well, cool. You can also become Jordan Peterson, who went from being a pretty brilliant thinker to being captured by his own audience and becoming some kind of, I don't know what he's become as a figure now, but certainly the quality of his content, his interaction has gone down, and his own anger and ego seem to have gone up. So do you want to be that? So at some point the machine owns you and you're just feeding algorithms and, you know, you live in that world where you're getting likes and clicks and followers, etc., and you're caught in it. So, okay, does that help original thinking? Probably not. Does that contribute anything to the discourse of the world? Probably not. Do people in the know see through it? Probably yes.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of an internal question again, which is, how does it make you feel? You know, are you developing your unique voice? Are you being creative? Are you producing content that you think is worth reading? Or are you playing an algorithm more in a machine that is designed for audience and attention capture?
Is it just a dopamine hit that you're chasing rather than...
But of course.
Yeah.
And so then, you know, do you need to live real time? It's another interesting question, right? Because the other disease in there is the concept that everything's real time all the time. If everything's real time all the time, by definition, you have no time to think. There's no stillness, right? So how are you supposed to know what you want or what's required or what's needed if everything's real time? So real time for me is a bug, not a feature. There's some things where it's useful if you're waiting for your Uber. that's about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and which goes back to, you know, the concept of Lindy books and writing blogs over writing posts, you know, Twitter threads over just sort of single kind of, you know, Twitter comments or whatever. And the more I've kind of gotten into the content game, which is only like a part of my life, as it were, the more I've realized I'm only interested in putting down things that are meaningful rather than things that are aimed at garnering attention, right? So what like a really good example of this, again, I know a bunch of people that kind of have very large LinkedIn profiles, et cetera, and their, you know, their attitude to all of this is, okay, but I did this post and it got, you know, 20,000 views, but this post only got 3,000 views. Okay, what's gone wrong? What can I do to fix that? And I think that's the wrong way of looking at it, because you are not in control of the algorithm in any case, and the algorithm will do whatever the fuck the algorithm's going to do ultimately. So actually the best thing you can do is say what you want to say and put it out there. And if that is something that drives value into your life, brilliant. If it doesn't, then, you know, so be it. But I think assuming that the value comes from the fact that someone has liked or commented or clicked or reposted or whatever, like actually that is, it's just the wrong lens to look at it, right? And again, I think that's driven predominantly by ego more than anything else. So one of the kind of topics that you and I have talked about is how not to suck, right? Like, what do you mean by that? How can VCs not suck? Because there is this sort of trope out there in the world that, you know, all VCs are shit and they say they're going to do stuff. And we've talked a lot about, you know, how they can show up at board and so on. But at the same time, VCs are responsible for managing the capital of others. They are responsible for showing up at boards and hopefully meaningfully providing direction towards founders and helping them on that journey and hopefully creating meaningful businesses that you know, yes, do return capital. Obviously, that is a fundamental part of the nature of venture. So I guess part of it is how can you extract the ego and be yourself and not suck and show up for everyone within that ecosystem, which is the LPs, your partners, founders, the firm, your co-investors, whoever.
Well, it's good practice in life, I think, to take yourself out of the equation for a minute and look at what it is you're actually trying to do, right? So the job of VC requires sourcing, investing with rigor, reinvesting with rigor, which means looking at your portfolio holistically and deciding where you're going to concentrate capital. These are rigorous processes where you owe it to yourself to show up in the right way. Then there's all the board management, which is where a lot of the soft stuff, angst, you know, hatred, rage, variance kind of show up. So the how not to suck, first of all, it's like, what is it that I'm trying to do across that curve to achieve the best outcome for my LPs and to ideally enjoy myself in the process and do good work, right? So what I observe, first of all, in the sucky department is there is really a loss of empathy for the founder's journey that is quite generalized. Having empathy for the founder journey does not mean you don't have a tough conversation or a tough decision to make, right? If you think about the word compassion, for example, compassion at the heart of it is, I can feel your pain and I know you're okay. I can feel your pain and I'm not going to fix you. I can feel your pain and my compassion will be grounded in truth. So the first trick here is to keep on feeling. But feeling doesn't mean you're joining the other side, quote unquote. Feeling doesn't mean you're stepping away from your role, right? So empathy, feeling into the space of the founder, having understanding and respect for the journey is like step one. And can we all go back to that? If I feel respect for my journey from you, founders are not stupid. They understand investors are to make investment decisions and are trying to drive value. Like, they're not dumb. But if they feel respect from you about what they're trying to do and the way in which they're trying to do it, you'll be a lot closer to having a high-quality conversation than you were 5 minutes ago, simply because you're bringing that across the table. So that's one. Number two is people don't know how to listen. It's amazing. Like, man, the amount of time people get interrupted halfway through a sentence. I mean, if somebody's rambling on for 10 minutes and covering 12 topics, I get it, and there's an intervention to do, but just deeply listen. You know, listen, pause, have a bit of a moment of silence in the room until the right question emerges. We don't fucking know how to listen. And VCs are terrible at that. So then there's no listening. There's no full body listening or full attention listening or any of that. People are just not skilled in it.
Mm.
Partly because they're coming into the room. They're like, we got 2 hours or we got 1 hour or something. And there's an input here and I want an output here. And, you know, you're focused on within the hour, you got to get through these topics and get to the answer. Which may or may not be possible. I don't know. Because for all I know, halfway through a board meeting, a real topic will emerge, which is really the thing we should be discussing that wasn't even on the agenda. That happens a lot, right? So we kind of go like, well, be present to what is and go like, well, where's this conversation taking us and is it a good conversation to have? So the sort of learning to listen, the being present, etc. Then actually fucking think. So check your biases at the door, confirmation biases, pattern recognition, super dangerous. Your past experience is not always a good guide, all that stuff. Go back to first principles, right? When you go back to first principles, you're basically in your beginner's mind. Also, look beyond the information that's being showed to you. Somebody's showing me a piece of information. Our acquisition, we're struggling on acquisition and, you know, the channels aren't scaling. Okay, cool. Can you take a step back and look at the entirety of the company and the problems it's facing? Because we can talk about acquisition all day long, but actually, you know, the problem we have is really the product doesn't quite need the needs of the customers yet, and we're not spending enough time on product health. And so we're super focused here because we're trying to drive revenues, because all the VCs are trying to drive revenues. So we're like, we got to drive revenues, so we got to drive acquisition. And you're like, actually, the core of the product's not fixed. So in that case, the right conversation to have would be, can we take the focus off growth? Can we go lower burn whilst we figure out the core of the product? Which wasn't the topic of the board meetings to start with, but is the right conversation to have. If you're not paying attention laterally and you're not thinking first principles, you're going to miss that. And then you're going to be having a debate about acquisition, retention is not working. And
which channel is working.
Unit economics are not working. This business is shit. So 6 months down the line, you're like, this business is shit. We're like, well, no, you didn't fix the source.
What is the fundamental
problem?
You didn't
fix the source problem to start with, right? So none of this allows you to be lazy or to swing by, right? If I'm going to listen to you, that takes full attention. If I'm going to actively listen to you and calm the voice in my head and park it to the side whilst I take in what you've told me, and then I'm going to go back to first principles and think about what you told me, and then I'm going to formulate something that's unique to your situation. Okay, that's work. You know, you can't just go like, I'll go to the board meeting and I'll be half on my phone and kind of wing it and say a few things and leave. So that's the being willing to do the work, right? And to give a period of time and a group of people your full attention. So the first step of not to suck is, I would say, is that. And then can you apply that everywhere? Mm-hmm. Can you do the same when your partner is trying to pitch you a deal at the Monday meeting? And instead of thinking about your deal or whatever you think is already, what you already know what's wrong with this deal, so you're not really listening, you're already waiting for the thing you're going to say. It's a classic, I'm listening to you, but I'm really just waiting to say the thing I wanted to say. So can you bring that everywhere, you know, and can we be that? So I think that for me is, again, it's a skill set. I mean, you develop this thing by doing active listening workshops, or you develop this thing by doing dyads, you know, or you develop this thing by meditating. Or whatever it may be. So these are trainable skills.
And not only that, but they are skills that go way beyond venture. I mean, like they are skills that I think have been lost in general over the last 10, 15 years. Like that art, like the art of listening, the art of the art of thinking about what you're saying rather than saying what you want to say. These are skills that I see less and less of actually in general in the world around us. And I think that's, again, a function, going back to what we were talking about earlier, it's a function of just the spewing of information that we see everywhere.
There's a lot of lazy thinking and prescriptive thinking.
Yeah.
This world of prescription, how to build a startup, how to lead your life, how to become a better lover, how to, like, whatever. We live in a world of prescription.
Yeah.
It's like, enough already. Anything you haven't experienced through your own path of learning and experiencing is bullshit. Because you don't own it, right? And so I dropped a post and it said trigger warning.
Yeah.
UK founders think VCs, their VCs suck,
right? It's doing the rounds at the moment, yeah.
And then I'm looking at the commentary, and the commentary is always the same. So I did that on purpose. It's a bit, today I'd like to make you think. So it's in that category.
Sure.
So it's not that the post is ambiguous on purpose, because the objective is to trigger conversation, right? So I know what I'm doing with that one, which is I'm pushing something out there that's a little bit of a statement, and it's imperfect, and it is designed to see what comes up, right? So the gift to the audience, so to speak, is to, I'd like to make you think about this question.
Not everyone's gonna come to it and say, yeah, okay, Fred's right.
Right.
They're gonna challenge, yeah.
So the answers that come back are, well, that's normal because all VCs should be operators. Okay, so trope number one. Or, well, that's normal because, VCs have never built anything and hence they can't be good board members. Trope number two. And so, and all these things, people pile in according to their belief system. Mm-hmm. So we live in a world of belief systems. And I'm like, well, that's bullshit, because the best board member we've ever seen, probably your best investor board member we've ever seen, is Mike Moritz at Sequoia.
Mm.
And he was a journalist.
Yeah.
So, I mean, and we can find 100 of those examples, right? So the rule doesn't work.
Life is not binary in any way.
Why do you keep applying the rule? Yeah. I mean, you know, there's a lot of individuals who defy where they come from to be great at what they do. Mm. Thank God, by the way. So all this labeling and simplification, so all of it's lazy thinking. Now, and everybody seems guilty of it. So we lost the ability to think, right?
I couldn't agree more. And it is... I mean, I'm hopeful of a world where, I think about where AI is going to take us. And I think the problem is there is the opportunity that thinking will become even lazier because you'll outsource your thinking to something else, which actually leads us, I guess, just as we wrap up this episode now, where do we go from here? So, you know, what are your thoughts about venture in a world of AI? And ultimately, where are you focused on for yourself now moving forward?
So AI acts as an interesting catalyst for sort of people reflecting on life on this planet, right? Because it's sort of taking our utility function away. A lot of the jobs that AI will do are the things we traditionally thought as being us at a deeper level, right? Mm-hmm. Creativity, authoring, and all that stuff. And so suddenly, we've lived in a world where your utility function is almost purely determined by your job, right? So what you do...
It's what defines you, yeah.
It's what you do in a system of remuneration and all the status that's associated with that. And so suddenly you go like, wait, hang on a minute. Some of these advanced jobs that we thought of as knowledge jobs are getting blown up. And then we're like, oh, shit, being a designer at a design agency, which was this really cool thing that you could do that had a specific status attached to it, is going to be replaced by machines really effectively. So then you're back to like, what's my purpose, right? So you get to these bigger questions. And humans, especially in Western societies, my observation would be we torture ourselves with the question of what are we doing with the talents we were given? And you can torture yourself your entire life with
how am I best spending my time on this planet kind of thing. Yeah,
yeah, and, you know, nothing's ever enough because I raise a 100 million fund, or I could raise a 200 million fund, or a 500 million fund, or whatever definition of success you dish out, you can always be exceeded by some other definition.
I always say you can't chase happiness. Happiness is a state of being. So you're either happy or you're not. but looking for happiness and success is one of the definitions, or one of the reasons, or one of the ways people think that they will achieve happiness is through success. But success is always a ever moving target, right?
I don't know if happiness is stable.
Yeah. So no, precisely.
I don't know if happiness is a goal.
Yeah, exactly.
Is particularly achievable, which is a bigger philosophical question. I think you can get to peace, inner peace, and you can get to freedom. And by freedom, I mean understanding the system you play in and determining your experience of it. Mm. I don't know that you can get to happiness reliably. I think it's kind of a tough goal to achieve. But no. So if you think about venture in a world of AI, look, I think there are systemic challenges we hadn't seen before, which are the technology stacks are quite stable. In the past, you know, you'd be on internet and then cloud and SaaS and then mobile, and there was some kind of evolutionary jump in the curve that would allow new companies to emerge because all the old guys don't know how to do mobile, so we're going to do mobile first and all that stuff. So all that's kind of gone away, and everybody's on some kind of JavaScript framework with, you know, Python and C and everything. So that commoditization of the tooling and the analytics and the scaling platforms, etc., means, you know, a lot of the businesses that we used to back are inherently less defensible, right? And this is quite a systemic problem. So I'm looking at these marketing automation, sales automation, blah, 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 sectors. There's 150 similar companies. All tried to become Gong, and you know, how do I pick a winner in that? I don't know. So then people push themselves to edge technology, which is great, and so there's a lot more edge investing in deep tech, which is fantastic. A lot of these are still science projects, so they come with their own issues in terms of timelines and adoption and industrial adoption, etc. So it's not an easy place to invest, but it's becoming easier because software is permeating everything. So they look more and more like software companies, which of course scale faster. And then incumbents, because we think of incumbents like Intercom or whatever is incumbents, they're not really. They're fast-moving software companies. So the capacity of who would be an acquirer to replicate, adapt, etc., something that a startup comes with, is a lot higher than it used to be.
Yeah.
So all that makes for a mix, which is a sort of the giant exit crisis we're facing, which is too many somewhat undifferentiated businesses with incumbents that are much better at replicating building internally. And so I think for me that poses some systemic challenges, which means I would go like way deep into, again, back to investment strategy and not go out without clarity around how I'm going to generate alpha. If you don't know where your sources of returns come from and you're kind of hoping for the best,
don't do it.
Go back to work and figure it out.
Yeah.
Because I don't think this is a market for the lazy. Venture's fucking hard. People forget how hard it is to build value sustainably. I mean, they're being reminded now. But man, I've had very few companies that were some kind of straight line to success. You know, Zoopla Series B, we had the lead investor pull out on the day of the Obama inauguration, 2 days from closing. And I had to go to my partners and pound the table and say, we're putting 3 million quid in there. And everybody's like, you failed to raise externally, which was correct. I'm like, we just had to fucking do it. You know, there's always some variant of that. You know, PillPack at some point gets sued by all the PBMs, the pharmacy benefit managers who cut off their supplies. And the only reason why we survived is because we managed to harness the power of our patients and shame them in the public domain together with some heroic lobbying efforts in Washington. I mean, so that company almost died in that process. So it's just hard, man.
Fred, we've run out of time, sadly. But we can do this again, I guess, at some point, if you can find the time. But look, I mean, this has been an incredible exploration of your thoughts on venture, your thoughts of where we are today, and actually, I think, a really candid talk about VC as a human craft, as something that, you know, people should not look at from the perspective purely of, you know, purely of what are the returns, where do we go from here, you know, what do we invest in, but actually, like, how do we turn this into something that is a meaningful pathway for people. For the audience, where is the best place for them to find you online? You're on LinkedIn, you're on Twitter. Where can they find you on the internet?
I'm Muff most places except for LinkedIn, okay, to be honest. So that's, check me out on LinkedIn.
Fred Dessen on LinkedIn. Okay. Well, look, thank you so much for joining me in the studio. It's been absolutely incredible. Really, really enjoyed the conversation.
Pleasure. Thank you so much.